Hi, everyone. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman, and welcome to What Women Must Know. Thank you for joining me. And as always, we have such fascinating conversations on this show. It's a wonderful opportunity for me to share with you the kind of knowledge that is really designed to empower you so you can make the most informed decisions possible regarding your health and well-being. And if you are new to the show, I just want to invite you to go to my website, whatwomenmustknow.com, because I have several free special reports that you get when you join, and there's always ongoing information, educational material to support you. And you might as well go over and like me at Facebook, which is also What Women Must Know, because I post every day, generally several times a day, and I'm just sharing with you some really relevant pieces of information, sometimes just things that are tickling my fancy, but always you'll find it always interesting. So let's talk about the conversation today. We're going to be interviewing a very inspiring, dedicated physician and a woman on a mission. We are having a conversation with Dr. Amy Myers, and she is the author of a fantastic book called The Autoimmune Solution, Prevent and Reverse the Full Spectrum of Inflammatory Symptoms and Diseases. So there you go. And a little bit about Amy. She is a specialist in autoimmune diseases whose career was set in motion by her own experience dealing with autoimmune issues. Amy graduated cum laude from the Honors College at the University of South Carolina, attended medical school at Louisiana State University Health Science Center, and completed her residency in emergency medicine at the University of Maryland. She founded the nationally renowned Functional Medicine Center, Austin Ultra Health, and currently serves as its medical director. So it's with great delight and pleasure that I welcome Dr. Amy Myers to the show. Hello, Amy.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. Well, thank you for making time in your busy day. I know that your book is on the New York Times bestsellers list. Congratulations. And
but we're hoping so.
Okay. Well, I predict it'll be there.
And... Oh, okay. Well, I do too, but, you know, we'll know tomorrow for sure. By the time this comes out, we can say hopefully yes.
Well, I just know how much it takes to write a comprehensive book like the one you put together. So for all the hard work and for all the pioneering work you've done in this area of autoimmune disease, I just really want to thank you, because it is a big problem. And you overcame your autoimmune condition, as I shared with you right before we started the interview. I also had to struggle with an autoimmune condition, which I've been able to overcome. And that's why I think we're both very passionate about the subject of understanding what is going on with our bodies, understanding this epidemic of autoimmune conditions, and most importantly, finding our way to the healing path. So perhaps the best place to begin today is to help people understand what is an autoimmune disease or a condition, however we'd like to define it.
So the definition of an autoimmune disease is our body attacking itself, and it attacks, in most cases, a particular organ. Certainly there are ones like lupus that attack many organs, but say Hashimoto's or Graves' disease is attacking the thyroid, diabetes is attacking the pancreas. And the true definition is enough tissue damage to warrant, you know, some sort of intervention, to where labs are abnormal, needing medication or some sort of intervention. So the true definition is, at a basic, our body is attacking itself. And then to really be by a medical definition, it's attacked itself enough to warrant some sort of intervention such as medication.
So what are the most common autoimmune diseases that we have in the Western world?
Well, I have a list of them in my book, and, that came actually from, I've forgotten, it's like the Academy of, Autoimmunity, or I have it in my book, the reference, and of course I've written this, well over a year ago, as you know, after writing a book, but or it's the Academy of Rheumatology or something, and their list actually lists Graves' disease, which is the one I suffered from, as being one of the top autoimmune diseases. I can just tell you clinically that's not what I see. Hashimoto's, which is the thyroid autoimmune disease where your thyroid becomes underactive, I see far, far, far more common. So, you know, I mean, I had to go with what the research is showing as the numbers. Quite honestly, I don't believe those numbers, or I don't know where they're truly getting that report, because I rarely, you know, see, for every, let's say, 100 people with Hashimoto's I see one with Graves. But certainly rheumatoid arthritis, lupus, MS, those are the ones that you're probably most familiar with, psoriasis. I mean, we even, in my book, I talk about fibromyalgia and chronic fatigue. While those aren't truly autoimmune diseases, they certainly share a lot of similarities to autoimmune diseases, and the program works for that. And then there's a whole host of research coming out that autism might be an autoimmune disease, and narcolepsy is an autoimmune disease. So we're really finding just, you know, every day in medicine and science, you know, things changing and what we're learning and discovering. So the list is just, I think, going to be added upon and added upon as time goes on.
I know, it's so interesting, because it seems that as we have more of an understanding of what the mechanism is of autoimmune disease, that there are more and more conditions that are being recognized as having an autoimmune cause, or at least component to them.
Certainly, and at the very least, most all chronic disease, if not every chronic disease, has an inflammatory component. And I talk about in my book an autoimmune spectrum, where inflammation is the first step of that. And it may be intermittent and waxing and waning, and then sort of coming and more severe, and then ultimately can potentially change into an autoimmune disease. So on that spectrum, again, if we start with just mild inflammation to moderate to severe to then potentially into autoimmunity, then, you know, the book can frankly help anybody out there. I mean, the cardiologist will tell you, and have for many years now, that a heart attack is an inflammatory process. So we know Alzheimer's and dementia are an inflammatory process. So, you know, obesity, frankly, is an inflammatory process. So it really, inflammation is the first seed leading into the ultimate destination, potentially, of autoimmunity, where your body's so inflamed that it goes so awry and begins to attack itself.
So it's this spectrum where you start initiating inflammatory response in the body, and if not addressed, if not kept in check or ideally resolved, healed, then it progresses to a more aggressive state that can then start acting as an autoimmune condition where the body is now being attacked by itself.
Yes, that is potentially what can happen. And just so people know, I mean, a certain amount of inflammation is normal and what our body's response is supposed to be. You cut your finger, you stub your toe, we have all kinds of inflammatory cells rush in. That's what, when you stub your toe or twist your ankle, it gets red and hot and swollen. And these are the normal processes for our immune cells to go in to heal the situation, or to go in and attack a virus when it comes. So that happens, the fire gets all settled, and then those immune cells, you know, die or go back to, you know, where they started from. Most of them die at that point. And but when we have this chronic inflammation, you know, it's just these signals going on in our body all the time from our immune cells saying, hey, the fire's over here, the fire's over here, come over here, come over here. And if we're constantly going over there, then, you know, that's when the real problems ensue. And I give a lot of fun analogies in my book to make this easy for people to understand, using a security squad and going in for, you know, for danger.
No, you do. You do have a lot of good metaphors, which helps to understand this, because it can be so confusing. And one of the things that caught my attention in your book, just a little statistic, that if you have one autoimmune condition, you're three times more likely to have other autoimmune conditions. Do I have that statistic right?
That statistic is correct, and I talk about in the book that, and of course, you know, as you and I were discussing before this, there's always somebody who wants to say something negative, right? So so I talk about in the book, Hashimoto's is the classically the one that I see Not the most, by any means, because now I'm seeing people from literally all over the world with all kinds of complex autoimmune diseases. But, you know, Hashimoto's, if treated properly, most people don't even know they have it, might get picked up just on a general blood test, or maybe they do know they have it, their hair is falling out, they've gained 5 pounds, they feel tired. Most people, if treated properly, get started on some medication and typically feel better. I'm not going to say, you know, there's a whole host, and I have tons of blogs on my website about how doctors can sort of, you know, get thyroid medicine wrong and all the problems with thyroid tests and all that kind of stuff. But for the most part, it can feel pretty good without a lot of side effects as compared to somebody with MS or rheumatoid arthritis or lupus, that, you know, their disease in and of itself can be debilitating. And then the medications that they have to go on can even be potentially sometimes more debilitating, or the side effects have, you know, are just equally as bad as whatever symptoms they're having. So I refer in my book about, you know, you might have Hashimoto's and you're thinking that this is kind of not a big deal. But if you don't really get to the root cause, which is what my whole book is about, and solve that, you're 3 times more likely to get something, and it could be, you know, rheumatoid arthritis or lupus or MS. So anyway, I get this feedback from somebody that I keep referring to this as like a lesser, you know, autoimmune disease. And like, well, did you read the book? Because, I mean, I actually have my thyroid ablated. Like, I get it with the thyroid. I'm not trying to make one better or less, but for the most part, those people with Hashimoto's, if treated on the proper medicine, do not experience potentially some of the same side effects as some of the other autoimmunity, with really debilitating, you know, not being able to get up or, you know, have to be in a wheelchair. So I'm not trying to make comparisons, but the point of all of that and that statistic is to say you can't really compare them and say, oh, I have MS, it doesn't matter, or I have Hashimoto's. It all matters, because once you have one, you are 3 times more likely to get another one, and the next time it might not be, you know, something that is as in conventional medicine relatively, you know, okay to, you know, go on the medicine and get somewhat symptom free. Hopefully I haven't just gotten myself into another rabbit hole with that whole conversation. But
you know, since we're on the topic of Hashimoto's, and this is something that I was diagnosed with, so I'm very aware of, and I see it so much in my practice as well. The couple of comments I want to make, first of all, when people get their blood workup done, the thyroid antibodies is rarely done routinely, so it's often missed. My concern when we have an obvious thyroid problem and to assume that it's just a hypothyroid, which is kind of a generic term anyway, is that we are missing the root cause problem, right? So if autoimmune diseases have a major component that has to do with chronic inflammation originating from inflammation in the gut, by putting someone on a thyroid hormone supplement, you know, whether it's Synthroid or whether it's Westroid or whatever, we are still not getting to the root cause, which is what you are focused on. It's what I am focused on. And therefore, the underlying problem is getting more chronic if it's not going to be addressed. So you're setting yourself up down the track to definitely have more compromised functioning of one sort or another in your life.
Yeah, I always tell, you know, I frequently will have people in my office, and I, of course, check thyroid antibodies on everybody that walks in the door because it's so common. But I might have a child, and I'm asking the mother, you know, her history, she says, I have hypothyroidism, do you, you know, it's not even the person that I'm seeing, and or, oh, their mom has it. And I recommend that they go get their antibodies checked. And you are correct, most conventional doctors don't check antibodies. And the reason that they don't is, in their mind, the treatment for hypothyroidism, whether it's Hashimoto's or just low thyroid, non-autoimmune, is to do the same thing, give you thyroid medication and call it a day. So in my mind, it makes a big difference. What I know in my experience and in my research is that the gluten molecule can look very similar to the thyroid molecule, and it's called molecular mimicry, and I talk about this in my book. And so anybody with any type of thyroid disease, I really recommend you get off gluten. And if you have autoimmune disease, because of all the research papers that I have, you know, in my bibliography of my book, over 300 of them, many of which are talking about the connection of gluten and leaky gut to autoimmunity, I absolutely tell you 100% to get off of gluten, as well as a whole host of other foods that are in the book, but the gluten being one of the biggest ones. And it is important to know that information. It really is important to know if yours is autoimmune or not, because it really does throw you into another category. And like I said, in conventional medicine, and as you said, they don't care. It's not going to do anything different for them. They're still going to give you Synthroid likely, and so it makes no difference. So many, many labs, if your doctor won't check it for you, are popping up around the country. There's in Texas a place called Any Lab Test Now. There's somebody was telling me about it yesterday, an online clearinghouse where you can get labs. I've forgotten the name of it right now. If I think of it, I'll mention it. But you can, you know, people are catching on. They want to know, and doctors aren't ordering tests because they're so, you know, beholden to insurance companies, and they get dinged if they order too many tests. But people want to know, so go out and get your antibodies tested so you know. And, you know, I don't specifically get into this in the book because I can't get into every autoimmune disease in the book, but I have plenty of free blogs on my website with exactly what I recommend that you should test. I do have a list of tests in the back of the book, but I don't go, you know, I don't have a chapter on each specific autoimmune disease because I, you know, treat the underlying cause, which is what the book is about, and it's very similar for many autoimmune diseases.
So let's talk about the underlying causes, the dynamics that are generating autoimmune diseases. And you have put together what you call your four pillars that address some of the underlying issues that generate autoimmune conditions. So maybe that's a good way for us to go next, is to look at those four pillars, because it will help people to understand what drives autoimmune diseases and what they need to do to start lightening the load on the body and reducing that inflammatory response.
Yes.
So does that sound like a good plan?
Sounds great.
So let's start with the first pillar.
So the first pillar is heal your gut. And so anybody with autoimmunity, this is really central for you. I mean, it's central for most people with chronic diseases, but 80% of our immune system is sitting right there. Our gut cells are one cell thick, and our immune system is right there, right below it, 80% of it. So if you have an autoimmune condition, you have a problem with your immune system, and likely there's something with the gut. We also know from Dr. Fasano's research, he's a Harvard physician and researcher, mostly with celiac, but talking about the link between gluten, releasing zonulin, which opens the tight junctions of the gut, causing a leaky gut. And this is really one of the steps that needs to be there in order to get an autoimmune disease. Where now there's a lot of research surrounding this with cancer as well. So fixing the gut. And I have a 4R program, which is a very simple program in the book, that I walk you through of how to heal the gut. You're going to get rid of some things, some foods, which is the next chapter. You're going to get rid of some infections, and I give you quizzes in the book to, you know, determine your risk, as if you maybe have a small bowel bacterial overgrowth or yeast overgrowth or parasites. And then I give you natural supplement choices that you can use to help rid yourself of these infections. We're going to add in some good things like good bacteria, and I give some suggestions about probiotics. We're going to add in some digestive enzymes, maybe some stomach acid if that's missing, and then some great things to heal your gut, like L-glutamine, which is an amino acid, or bone broth, which we have a recipe for and recommend reading it, eating it every morning for breakfast, or if you don't have the time to do that, to put some collagen in your tea. And again, we give you suggestions for that. So healing your gut is really central if you have an autoimmune disease, and pretty much it's where I start with all my patients. And I'd like to back up and just say that I know that functional medicine is not available to, you know, to everybody. It's just either not in your area. Many of us don't take insurance, because I only personally see 4 to 5 patients a day, because I am spending so much time with patients in order to uncover these complex issues and really get to the root. And I, you know, insurance companies would never reimburse me for that. So this is really the closest thing that there is to come seeing me. I mean, this is exactly what I do with my patients over and over and over. And, you know, it's tested by time. It's tested by thousands of patients. And this is exactly what I do with them. So you know, I didn't hold back in this book and not give you one of the main key things. I talk about it all here.
I know. That's why I love your book. It's so comprehensive. And I want to, I want us to talk a little bit about the gut. And I want us, and in this first pillar where we're talking about addressing and healing the gut, but I'd like us to explore a little bit more so people understand exactly why the gut and what is this inflammatory gut that we hear about? What is it? What does it do? What causes it? I think people really need to understand this because it's almost like a pat phrase now, but I don't think it's fully understood nor appreciated how it's such a major contributor to chronic illnesses. So can we spend a little time there?
Sure. So leaky gut. So our gut is somewhat permeable to very, very small particles. That's how we actually digest or actually absorb our nutrients. So there are these, the cells are held together by something called tight junctions. And those tight junctions open a tiny bit every, you know, second of every day in order to allow nutrients in. I like to think of it as like a drawbridge, right? It's letting you can, all the little ships can get through, and a drawbridge needs to open up for the big stuff. Well, the drawbridge is never really supposed to fully open up because these big things are not meant to get in. But when we eat a diet of GMO foods and processed foods and sugars, when we go on antibiotics, when we take acid blocking medications, birth control pills, steroids, I mean, again, there's a whole list in my book of things that cause leaky gut. When we are stressed, age, when infections, when these things happen, these particularly gluten actually sticks on to that tight junction at a receptor and basically opens up that drawbridge. And when that drawbridge is open, all the big ships, i.e. big particles, can get through that were never meant to get through. So those big particles can be infections. They can be things like the gluten molecule, which is very large and not meant to get into our bloodstream, the casein molecule. And then our body, you know, is like, wait, this is foreign. This isn't supposed to be here. And it goes and attacks it. And I talk about in my book, molecular mimicry. Again, some of these proteins of these foods and even viruses or bacteria can look similar to our own tissues. So as our body goes to fight what it thinks is gluten or the Epstein-Barr virus, it accidentally attacks your thyroid or it attacks your joint or, you know, and then the organ gets damaged and then an autoimmune disease comes out. So, it's really the first step is to close back down that drawbridge and stop this stuff from coming in. When you can stop the stuff from coming in, then it calms down the inflammation. Your body is not on attack because it's not seeing gluten coming in every day anymore. It's not, you know, seeing this Epstein-Barr virus. I mean, it's your gut, and then right on the next side of that one cell is your immune system, and then, you know, then we go into our bloodstream, and as you know, with one beat of your heart, boom, it pumps around your entire body.
And then, and if you have the lining of your gut impaired or compromised, then it also reduces your capacity to absorb and assimilate your nutrients. So people always say to me, well, I'm eating a really good diet, which is debatable. But the other thing that's critically important is, but how much of that are you capable of absorbing and assimilating if your gut is impaired?
Well, I want to say two things about that. Yes, you are correct. I don't say it as you are what you eat. I say it as you are what you digest and absorb, and I see it every day. People coming in already, you know, much of my diet program is somewhat similar to a paleo diet, and I have people already coming in on a paleo diet, and they're, you know, eating all this protein, and then we check their amino acids, and they're in the toilet. And it's like, well, why is that? Oh, you didn't have stomach acid. Oh, you didn't have digestive enzymes. Oh, you had three infections in your gut. You know, you couldn't, you know, digest and absorb and assimilate all this. The other thing that I want to say is our gut cells turn over every 24 to 48 hours, which is why, like a lot of people who do chemo, you know, it kills the fast acting cells. And So it is both why we can have problems quickly, but also why we can heal our gut quickly. So we are live in a toxic world, and we're eating, you know, foods and taking medications. And, I mean, taking a simple Advil, you know, will give you a leaky gut. Fasano says, you know, eating gluten for anybody gives you a leaky gut in that moment, right? I mean, it's like you get a little cut, but our body can heal it overnight. And so, you know, we're constantly getting a little bit of a leaky gut, and we're constantly repairing it. The problem is when there's so many insults and so much damage that you just cannot repair it fast enough, and then you're really in this truly inflamed state. So, I mean, do I absolutely never, ever in my lifetime take an Advil? I rarely have need to, but on a rare occasion, if I'm in a, you know, bind and it's really something and I've got to go, you know, give a talk or do a thing and my head is pounding or something, I'll take one, and I got a little bit of a leaky gut, but I, you know, drink my bone broth, and I take my L-glutamine, and I'm drinking tea right now with my collagen in it, and I'm constantly trying to do things to just, you know, keep me healthy, because there's so many things that are actually out of our influence. If you're a person who travels like I do, yes, I eat organic in my own home and avoid all GMOs, but you know, you want to go out to eat somewhere, that's difficult to do. So I think in my book, I really give you, you know, ideal scenarios, but I live this way myself. So I'm not trying to get you to do something that's so impossible that, you know, I'm not doing, or I'm expecting you to live in the bubble. I give you the information so you can be aware. You can do things that you can do in your, you know, of what you can have control over, and then things to do that you can hopefully protect yourself when you don't have control and you've really got to go out into the real world, which is where all of us actually live, you know?
Right. And, you know, for me, when I needed to address the underlying issues, which is how I got started on this journey to heal the Hashimoto's diagnosis, it really made me address a lot of issues. I had to change the way I was eating. I had to eliminate toxic exposures. I had to restore adrenal function. It was like a major wake-up call and a blessing in disguise, because it led me to a whole transformation that not only improved my health but improved everything, you know, the way I think, my moods, vitality. It was such a gift to have the ability to discover this. And this was many years ago, before this growing awareness of autoimmune disease and the root cause approach was even known. But, you know, it's changed my life forever, because you can't go back to the old ways. And with the awareness that you gain from doing this investigation and these changes, it really is supporting and optimizing your health for the long term, which is such a big message here. If you want to be healthy and vital to your last breath, these are the things that you need to be incorporating into your life.
Well, I appreciate that you bring that up, because the program is called the Myers Way, and the reason that it's called the Myers Way is it is a way of life. It's not, you know, yes, the book encompasses a 30-day program, and that's really to get people to, you know, to hopefully get well, to reverse their autoimmunity. Of course, some people will take them longer than 30 days, and some, you know, really complex cases will still need to see potentially a functional medicine doctor on top of it. And once you've done that, then it's a way of life. You know, we give you tools to see if you can add in the foods and or which foods you can add in. And it's we also hope in the term the Myers Way that it's not only a way of life for you, that you tell a friend, you incorporate it into your family, your kids are eating this way, and it's really a way of life for a whole family rather than just one individual. And the other aspect of what you said is, you know, for the vast majority of people that come to see me and they have done this and their symptoms have resolved and their antibodies have decreased or gone away and they're off their medication, not eating gluten and dairy is a very easy thing to do when the alternative is eating them and being on, you know, three medications that increase your risk of cancer, maybe give you heartburn and brain fog, and, you know, you have joint pain still on top of it. So it's just kind of a no-brainer for most people. I mean, once they do it and they experience how good they feel, better than they felt, you know, without the meds, and certainly better than they feel with the meds, it's really, you know, for me, I look at a piece of gluten. I mean, you could fill my whole house with cupcakes, and it's people are like, wow, the willpower. You know, I go out to dinner. I use this as an example in the book, you know, just kind of how to, you know, do this and still have a social life. And I remember going to dinner with some friends, and they had ordered dessert, and it was, I don't know, some kind of cake or something. I honestly don't even remember what it is. And I remember sort of I was in the midst of a conversation. The waiter came and put it down. I glanced, registered in my mind, gluten, dairy, can't have it. And I didn't think anything of it. It was like literally a nanosecond. I didn't skip a beat. I kept on, you know, chatting with her. And then she looked down. She's like, oh, I'm so sorry. You know, like they didn't, you know, they ordered dessert. And I was like, oh, I frankly didn't, like I noticed to the point that I noticed that, oh, I'm not going to eat that. But it was like a nanosecond in my life that it wasn't affecting me. I knew that if I ate that, I was going to be really sick. And I knew that it was going to cause my, you know, antibodies to probably rise overnight, and I didn't want that to happen. So, you know, there are all these people like, oh, my God, I'm so sorry. And I'm like, for what? You know, what are you talking about? And then I realized, oh, she's talking about the dessert. Oh, you know, like, I don't care. You know, I'll go home and have a piece of dark chocolate, and I'll be fine.
You have this whole picture of this whole biological process going on that is a negative, that is a negative
yeah.
image you don't want to go there. But the other thing, and then we need to take a break, but I just want to comment what happens as we are able to understand the deleterious effects of things like gluten and get off of them. We also lose the addiction that carbs and gluten have in our brain. So that's part of the gift of finding your way to a more healthy diet is that you are actually freeing yourself from addictions that are literally forcing you to make these choices, these unhealthy choices, so you can then be more sane and make the best choice for your health and well-being.
Yeah, and I mean, just if I have a quick second to be able to say, that I think that's what I do in the book. I give you enough information for you to know that it's a problem and why it's a problem. I don't bog you down with so much information and so much science that you get overwhelmed by it. And then I give you the solution. So, you know, knowledge is power. And the more you, if I just told you don't eat gluten, you have an autoimmune disease, how well is that going to stick? If I tell you every time you eat gluten, even if it's a tiny little bit of a communion wafer, do you have autoimmunity? What we believe happens by some studies is that it can stimulate your immune system for up to 3 months. So if you did that four times a year, you never gave your body a break. And when I tell people that, suddenly they stop eating it. So, and I've seen it. I have seen people accidentally get gluten. I have had people consciously eat it, and then we check their thyroid antibodies, and they bounce up. I mean, I heard that statistic before, and I've told it to people, and when they've gotten gluten accidentally or they just, you know, fell off the program or whatever and ate it, people will come back in and say, you know, I want to check that. And every time their antibodies are up.
Yeah, that was pretty amazing when I read that. That is, it can elevate the antibodies for 3 months after you have a piece of gluten or whatever food you may have a reaction to, but up to 3 months, huge. So it you know, looks like it's an insignificant little amount that you're taking in, but to your body, it has huge consequences that last.
And, you know, and somebody with rheumatoid arthritis, they might be able to tell, right? They eat the gluten, their joints flare up. But most people, the vast majority of people with thyroid antibodies cannot tell when their thyroid antibodies are elevated or low or what. They, you know, that is not for that. I mean, I do see super, super sensitive people and they can tell, but the vast majority of people cannot tell. So you can't use your symptoms as a guide with that one, as opposed to somebody with MS or rheumatoid arthritis or lupus might have a flare or weakness or pain or something, with you know, autoimmune thyroid, most people have no idea.
Okay, well, this is a good place to take a break, and then we will come back and talk about the other three pillars of Dr. Amy Meyer's program. She's the author of The Autoimmune Solution, and you are listening to What Women Must Know. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman, and we will be right back. Hi, everyone. Welcome back. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman. You're listening to What Women Must Know, and today we're having a wonderful and quite profound conversation with Dr. Amy Meyer. She is the author of The Autoimmune Solution, Prevent and Reverse the Full Spectrum of Inflammatory Symptoms and Diseases. Before we go any further, Amy, what is the best website for people to read more about your blogs and your recommendations and learn all the good things that you're sharing?
My website and social media and everything, I made it easy for you. It's under the same name, Amy Myers, M-D, AmyMyersMD.com.
Okay, great, because that's a great website. That's a wonderful resource to go to and to learn more about this subject, because I'm sure people will be really interested. Okay, let's go on to the second pillar of your four-pillar protocol.
Yeah, so that is to get rid of gluten, grains, and legumes. And we touched a little bit on it about, at least with gluten, in our previous conversation before the break about the research surrounding gluten and autoimmunity and gluten and its role in creating leaky gut. The same thing with grains and legumes. Let me back up and say, people say, oh, you know, we've always eaten these things, particularly bread. It's a staple of life, bread, that, you know, it's the bread of life. So a couple things about that. One, we have not always eaten them. We were actually, if you believe in evolution, a hunter-gatherer society, and we did not have agriculture. And so we actually ate what we could kill, which was meat and some berries and some seeds and, you know, plants. So then we started an agrarian society, and we started planting and eating more grains. So grains can, and legumes, have lectins in them that for some people can be very irritating to the gut. I also want to make the statement, and I talk about this in my book, I was a vegetarian for 27 years and only started eating meat a few years ago. So I understand personally, you know, that change. I certainly understand what I believe it did to my health and what I see it doing to other people's health when they come into my clinic. The other thing about gluten in particular, and often grains, other grains and, you know, things like soy and corn that are legumes or pseudograins, we have genetically altered much of our food supply, or a large part of what many people are eating. And gluten has not been genetically modified. It has been hybridized. And I like to tell people there is sort of the perfect storm going on right now. So the gluten that we are eating, or I'm not eating it, but it's, you know, the gluten that's out there now is not the same. Or I'll use wheat for the purpose of, you know, to make the conversation maybe easier for people to understand. The wheat that's out there now is not the same wheat that your parents were eating, and certainly not the same wheat that our grandparents were eating. So in our lifetime, in my lifetime, the wheat has been hybridized and altered. When we hybridized it, the proteins, rather than replacing the proteins, actually added more proteins to the plant. That then added more gluten to the plant. So there is more gluten in the wheat that we have today than the wheat that, you know, we grew up on as children. We also learned to do something called deaminate the wheat, which means that we made it water-soluble. So now it can be in everything, from your shampoo and lotion to your veggie burger and, fake crab sushi roll. And so now it's in everything. And then we live in a toxic world, and we all have leaky guts, like our conversation from before, or many of us do. So it's this perfect storm of, we have more toxins, we have more stress than we've ever had, we're eating a processed diet of altered foods, either genetically or hybridized. Wheat is in absolutely everything nowadays. And you put that whole, and then we're eating a ton of it and getting exposed to it everywhere, and you put all that together, and now it's a problem. Because people are, you know, of course, you see the articles out there about, this is a fad, this gluten-free thing, why is this a problem, we've always eaten this. Well, hopefully people get that now. We have not always eaten this particular wheat and this amount of gluten, and then you add all the other factors in, and it is becoming a real problem for pretty much, I mean, at least all the patients I see. But I do believe it's an inflammatory food. Do I think everybody Has a gluten problem? No, but I think in the way that we're eating it and the quantities that we're eating it, it's, and all the other factors going on, it's a problem for a lot of people. And then, you know, the grains and legumes, I have you get those out for at least 30 days on my program or until you're off your medications and have become symptom-free. And then you can see, you know, down the road, is that something that you can tolerate a little bit of or not? I tell people I'm getting ready to get married. In an ideal world, I'd have an almond flour cake, but we're having some problems with that. So I'm actually having a gluten-free, dairy-free cake. Do I never eat grains? I don't have any in my house. I don't really ever eat them. I might indulge in a gluten-free, dairy-free treat every once in a while. And that's kind of the extent of it for me. So, but I've gotten well, and, you know, I seem to be able to handle that. So we give you the tools later on to be able to, you know, add some of these foods back in and see how you do. I don't ever recommend that you add back in gluten, and likely not dairy either, because of that word molecular mimicry that we talked about earlier in the show, that there are certain proteins that look similar to other proteins, and the dairy or casein molecule can look very similar to the gluten molecule to many people's body.
A couple of things I just want to say, in regards to what you were talking about. I have been doing nutrigenomic testing for the last 3 years. So I can look at people's SNPs, and I know you mentioned a little bit about it in the book. So these are the tendencies that show our vulnerabilities. And I just see more and more people who have inherited genes or gene expressions that are very prone to have inflammatory molecules, cytokines turned on. So they're predisposed to be very pro-inflammatory, which makes them very vulnerable when they have all these other issues going on, because on a genomic level, they are just, you know, not able to manage inflammation very well and all the other issues that contribute to that. And the interesting thing, Amy, is that I have worked with 3 generations. I've worked with grandparents, parents, and their children with their genomic tests. And I can tell you that each generation is getting more and more compromised and impaired. And when I work with children, they have so many more gene issues showing. They're very vulnerable to inflammation, very vulnerable to oxidative stress, very vulnerable to impaired detoxification. So that's just another huge piece that I see adding to this huge storm we've been talking about.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I do, you know, talk about it, you know, to some degree in my book. I personally, have a lot of those SNPs as well that don't allow me to detoxify, and that certainly was a factor in my autoimmunity. I do check for one of the SNPs that I talk about in the book, the MTHFR, on, you know, every patient that comes in, because we can get that through the regular lab now. The other ones you typically have to do specialized, you know, testing through, one of the functional medicine labs, and it just gets, for a lot of people, cost prohibitive.
So one other thing I wanted to ask you, because you talk about the 27 years that you were a vegetarian. I know I was a vegetarian for over 20 years as well in the past. What are your comments? What is your advice to people who are vegans and vegetarians?
My editor actually is one, and although my book might have convinced him to be otherwise, he was very adamant that I put at least a fish plan in my book, or a plan with seafood in it. So I think if you're a vegan, it's going to be, and you're really not eating anything, it's going to be tough. I mean, I never tell anybody that, we can't do it. But certainly if I see that on their intake form and they're seeing me, one of the first conversations we're having pretty immediately in the office is, what is your willingness to change that? I believe that there is no one right diet for every single person on this planet. I can tell you what I see has worked with, thousands of patients, and what has been in the past. There are plenty of people out there who will tell you they reverse something with a vegan diet or a raw diet, or eating just something different, right? So they're going to be critics of everything, and I'm not going to, I'm just telling you my personal experience and my experience with thousands of patients. And we have that conversation, and I have had people who had literally, for religious reasons, never eaten a bite of meat, and, they finally did, and it's what got them well. There are other people that I say, you know, we might be able to get you well, and there are other people that we might hit a plateau, and this really might be, you know, the sticking point. I'm not in charge here, right? I mean, it's so much bigger than either one of us of how someone gets well that, you know, I'm not going to make that prediction now, but I like to have the conversation so I know, you know, this person is not going to budge. This person is, you know, open but would rather not. This person is like, whatever I need to do to get well, just so I kind of know. I also don't want to sit and talk about, you know, meet in an appointment if somebody's really offended by that, right? I mean, I want to be cognizant and you know, empathetic to that. So it also affects kind of the conversations that I have with them. I will say that, you know, when you really, which is what happened to me, right, you get down to, like, I have an issue with gluten, I have an issue with dairy, I can't eat eggs, I can't eat soy, I can't eat corn. You know, you find that you start having problems with these foods, or you've always had a problem, but you start realizing that they're a problem. Then you add on yeast overgrowth or small bowel bacterial overgrowth, both of which I had. Those are fed off of carbs and grains. I mean, you know, quinoa, it's still a carb. Soy, it's still a carb. And so when you're kind of getting down to, like, oh, my God, I've got to starve these things and get off the carbs, plus I've got a sensitivity to this, like, what literally is left to eat? You cannot just eat vegetables and fruit. Like, you need protein. So, you know, for me, it just became like, okay, this is going to be my medicine. And that's really how I have people view it. You know, I say food is medicine. And if this was your medicine, would you do it to get well? And again, I even talk about it in the book, strategies that I used in the beginning, you know, to, you know, I could only eat hamburger meat really ground up and, like, cooked like taco meat because I couldn't bite into something. You know, it's only probably in the last year or so that, like, I will eat steak and, like, cut into a steak. But it's one of the reasons I gave up meat. I didn't like, you know, the texture thing for me. So, I mean, I get it. I get it from a personal perspective. I get it. It wasn't like, oh, suddenly somebody just gave me their green light. I get to eat meat. Yay. I mean, it was a challenge for me to go back to it for so many different reasons. If somebody's not eating meat for environmental reasons or ethical reasons, I mean, you know, there are environmentally good ways to eat meat, grass-fed. I mean, yes, there is a problem with how conventional meat is raised and a whole problem with hormones and all that other stuff, but that's not our battle to fight, right? The more people that actually want grass-fed beef and humanely raised animals and pasture-raised and from your local farmer, the more that's just going to be easier to get. And so, you know, that whole thing about the environment, that's McDonald's and other people. That's not, you know, the yous and me's of the world, you know, eating that. So all this to say that I'm not going to tell you now, don't buy the book. If you don't eat meat, you're not going to get any help. Absolutely, you will still get help. If you, you know, you can still follow the program and leave out the meat. You may get well, and you may need to consider eating meat. I can't predict that. I can't predict that. So I would not tell you if you're vegetarian or a vegan to not pick up the book. There's a lot of valuable information. The diet is one of the four pillars. And there, you know, three other pillars that there are to work with. And the diet we give you, we, you know, tried to be cognizant and sensitive without compromising my program to people who don't eat meat.
And I just to make this little point, then we can move on. The reason why protein is so important, at least what I tell my patients, is because that's how you rebuild your body. That's how you rebuild your structures, your muscles. That's how you help to, you know, make your hormones, your digestive enzymes, and, you know, everything up from there. So if you are not getting adequate sources of protein, your body can never heal and repair. And that
it frankly makes our immune system as well, right? Mm. So you need those those amino acids to get that, to do that exactly.
So, you know, I find, and of course it was also true for me, I needed to understand the importance of protein, because somehow protein has a bit become demonized by some, and, you know, at least over on the vegan vegetarian side of things, of course not over on the paleo, all these different food models, but it's just understanding. And what you said is so profound. We need to see what we're taking into our body as medicine, and if we know that this is the medicine that's going to support our body to heal, are we open to it? Because that's what we want. We want to heal, and we need to heal.
Right. You know? Right, right. And then I really hate that people make it these two different camps of like paleo versus vegan, and that they're like two opposite ends of the spectrum rather than focusing on the similarities, which is that both are talking about eating whole, real foods, usually organic, unprocessed, lots of vegetables, fruit. I mean, I don't advocate tons of fruit just because of the sugar content for, again, SIBO and small bowel bacterial, yeast and that kind of stuff. And then, you know, really the only difference lies in, do you then add in some, you know, lean animal, organic, humanely raised, pasture raised, grass fed, you know, meat, or do you not? It's not these two opposite ends of the spectrum. It's really the similarities are huge. And then there's really only one fundamental difference. Is there some meat in there or not? And I wish more people would spend more time focusing on the similarities of it rather than feeling like they're opposite ends of the spectrum, because the message is the same.
And when I studied Chinese medicine, it really helped me understand that food is medicine, and you need to eat the diet that is the right medicine for what your body is going through at this time, you know, and whatever that may be. So it really helped me get over a lot of my prejudices. Thank goodness. So, Amy, we're coming to the end of the conversation, but I want to be sure we just mention what those other two points are, and then hopefully people will invest in
yeah.
an autoimmune solution, go to your website. So what are the last two remaining points of the pillar?
So the last two are tame the toxins. So I have a chapter just about the toxins we're exposed to, and again, spend a little bit of time kind of giving you some information and lots of time giving you solutions and ways to prevent and to get rid of toxins. And then the last one is actually two in one, which is heal your infections and relieve your stress. So there's some infections that are known to be implicated in autoimmunity, and I talk about those. And then stress, which is actually probably one of the biggest factors. You can be doing the diet perfectly and all this stuff, and if you have tons of stress going on, you hate your job, you're in a terrible marriage, you know, whatever, you need to find ways to deal with that, and I give you some strategies for that as well.
Can we just talk, in the time we have left, can we talk a little bit about the role of the emotional and mental component and the impact of stress as one of the initiators of an autoimmune or inflammatory state in the body?
Sure. So, you know, back in the day, again, in our hunter-gatherer day, we would, you know, see a saber-toothed tiger coming at us. Cortisol would kick in. We'd get stressed. It's fight or flight. So it would, you know, get all this cortisol pumped in, rev us up so we can run away from the saber-toothed tiger. And then the saber-toothed tiger, we get away. Our stress goes away. You know, we chill out and we're just, you know, looking for some food. Well, now what we have is, you know, chronic, toxins that are stressing our system, foods that are stressing our system, relationships that are stressing our system, jobs. People are working 80, 100 hours a week. We have these iPhones. We have computers everywhere, the digital age. We're getting stressed. Somebody didn't text us back in, you know, 2 minutes. You know, what took them so long to, you know, feeling like we are connected and have to be answering the phone or checking our email all the time. And so that cortisol is being raised all the time. And that's helpful in an emergency situation in order to get us up and going and get us through that situation. But when that is stressed all the time and that cortisol is constantly raised, what ultimately ends up happening is it suppresses our immune system. And then that's why I put it in the chapter with infections. Then when you have these latent infections like, you know, the herpes virus or Epstein-Barr or things, then these infections can come out, and then that stresses the body again. So it's kind of a cycle, and why I put those two things together. But even if you're not having those infections, it's just, you know, suppressing the immune system, and then something else comes. So it's why when you have exams, you're a college student, you stay up every night, you know, or you might stay up three nights in a row, or you stayed up till 4 a.m. three nights in a row, and you got through your exams and you aced them and you feel amazing and you can't even believe you stayed up for three nights in a row and didn't skip a beat because you feel so amazing. That's all that cortisol. Then you hop on the plane and you head home and you arrive home and suddenly you're like, oh my God, I feel it coming on. That person next to me on the plane had the flu. I picked it up. Now I'm sick. Spent my whole Christmas vacation in bed with a fever of 104 and the flu.
You know, as you're saying this, I'm thinking, because you talked about your history in medical school, you wonder how any medical student can ever come out of school and residency healthy because of the huge demands and stresses and lack of sleep. And the whole system is so dysfunctional in that regard, isn't it?
Yes. I mean, I tell people it's really not until I got out of conventional medicine that I really healed myself and that I was really able for the first time in my life to be able to really heal people. So it is quite a shame that I do more healing now with my patients than I ever did under the conventional model of medicine. And yes, the number of people that I know that got some sort of illness, many autoimmune, while in not necessarily medical school but residency, it's quite shocking.
Yeah, you know, it's a system that breeds a huge amount of stress, and as do, you know, many other professions as well. And one last thing I wanted to ask: when a person goes to a doctor and they have rheumatoid arthritis, they have MS, they've got whatever, you know, more obvious and chronic forms of autoimmune diseases, and they're put on cortisone, which is one of the treatments, correct?
Mm-hmm. One of the first line treatments.
Yeah, it's very commonly given out. I was told you should never have more than one cortisone treatment in a lifetime. Is that true? And do you just want to make a quick comment about that as a treatment that people are receiving from their doctors when they have these autoimmune conditions?
Well, I don't know where that statistic comes from or in regards to what. I mean, what I can say is it's exactly what I'm talking about. I mean, it's there to help, but ultimately, I mean, that's what it's doing. It's suppressing the immune system. And it doesn't just say, oh, I'm just going to suppress these bad immune cells that are attacking your joints. It suppresses your entire immune system, which then can lead to you getting sick, which is why people on these medications and immunosuppressive drugs are at much higher risk of getting an infection if they have a cut or surgery. They're often cannot be around grandchildren and family members who are sick. They're at higher risk for lymphomas and cancers because your immune system is there to protect you from all this stuff, and it is suppressing your immune system or, you know, dampening its response. And then we talked about leaky gut, and steroids are certainly one of the medications that can create a leaky gut. So we just said the whole point of, or how one of the major ways that we get are able to reverse autoimmunity is by healing the gut, because 80% of the immune system's in the gut. Then you're taking a medication that's constantly leaving your gut leaky, and then suppressing your immune system and leaving you open to, you know, potentially worse things. That tells the story of my father, is one of the last stories of the book, and his autoimmunity and how he's now off all of his medications, but he was going in for a hip surgery and had to have 5 surgeries because of the infections he got, because he was on prednisone and other immunosuppressive drugs for his autoimmunity. He then, of course, followed the program and got off all of his medications. But, you know, that was the blessing in disguise. And I talk about that in the book about, you know, of course, I've written this book and I'm, you know, encouraging him to do this, and he doesn't really want to do it. And then he gets these infections and he's like, okay, I'm going to do it. And then, you know, then he gets off of everything. But,
and you finally get to be appreciated by your family.
I was appreciated. I understand. In fact, he actually wrote a review on the book, and it was very sweet because, you know, he talks about how he had tried gluten-free and, you know, he didn't notice anything. And so when you don't notice something and you're 78 years old and, you know, you don't feel great, who wants to give up something they love, right? And then it was only the fear of all these infections that, you know, it was like, we've got to get you off all this stuff. And he did everything. And I don't want to spoil the story for everybody because it's actually, one of the chapters in the book is, you know, the chapter of hope, and it's all patient stories. You know, that are there to meant to be uplifting, to let you know that it can be done.
Well, we've come to the end of the show, Amy, but it's been such a pleasure. Thank you for the great work you're doing. I wish you all the best, great success on your book and the important message that you're sharing with the world.
Well, thank you so much for having me and helping to spread the message.
It's been a pleasure. So thank you, Amy, and thank you, everyone else listening. You can pick up Amy's book, The Autoimmune Solution. Go to her website, Amy Myers, M-D, and Myers is M-Y-E-R-S. And to all of you, remember, always honor the wisdom of your feminine self. Bye for now.